Hello, everybody. This is the Startup Catalyst podcast brought to you by Sultan Ventures, the show where we interview entrepreneurs and investors on the stories and catalysts of their startup successes and failures. I'm your host, Luke Tucker. Today's guest is Warren Doy, go-to-market lead at Energy Accelerator. Warren is a serial entrepreneur. He co-founded Green Car Hawaii, a company that built a clean energy transportation network with zero emission vehicles, among several other companies that he started. He successfully raised over $10 million in investment capital over the years. Now, I want to take a second to brag a little bit about Warren and the Energy Accelerator. They are, I would say, the premier energy accelerator in the country, if not the world. Hawaii is very fortunate to have their leadership and vision for renewable energy. We are, after all, an island that is dependent upon shipping much of our energy source and fuel, so their work is vital. In the interview, Warren talks about successes and failures with the Green Car, his time working for exciting startups in the Valley, and the awesome work he's doing with the Energy Accelerator. Warren is also very active in mentoring, giving back, working on various islands, providing that guidance and support for young startups and entrepreneurs. So we get into some of his views on Hawaii's entrepreneurship scene and the startups that he sees here in our islands. Warren is a very talented and a smart entrepreneur. I thoroughly enjoyed the chance to chat with him, so I know that you will also enjoy my conversation with Warren Doy. Warren, pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So we were talking a little bit before we pressed record, and so I thought actually when I was kind of looking at you, you grew up in Kauai, but you actually grew up on the Big Island.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Well, my family's from the Big Island. My wife's family's from Kauai. So, you know, obviously she won out and we live on Kauai. But no, really, I love Kauai and we wanted to raise our kids there.
Yeah, yeah. So I know you've kind of had a diverse path through your career or whatnot, starting in Hawaii, now, you know, being able to be here. But I kind of did that actually. I like to ask this question to a lot of guests because I'm super curious about, were you like the kid that was doing the mango stands on the side? Like, were you like the kind of that prototypical, were you always an entrepreneur, like selling like candy to your friends at school? Or
yeah, that's an interesting question. I wasn't that guy. And a matter of fact, my son loves to do that. He does the lemonade stands all through the summer and stuff like that. No, I guess, you know, I was always an entrepreneur and I always had it kind of in my DNA, but it was more about like creating something. It was less about money and making money and more about like, hey, you know, what can I do that's exciting that hadn't been done before? And that's kind of what's driven me through my entrepreneurial journey.
Yeah. So in high school or whatnot, did you feel like, did you kind of see the world through a different lens? Like, did you have like a different kind of perspective on risk, or how did that kind of come about for you?
I mean, I think in high school, I think like growing up, I was pretty much a normal kid. I think I was just, I wasn't thinking about like what I was going to do. I don't know if that's normal or not normal, but I think when it really hit me was in college. It was like, Right. Okay, now I'm getting serious. What am I going to do? You know, and what interests me. And again, I just explored a lot of different things. I changed my major a number of times, drove my parents crazy.
Yeah, I'm sure. So you were in California at the time at Cal Poly?
Yeah.
Cal Poly Tech.
So I went to Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo, and they're known for not allowing you to change your major. So,
oh, really? They were pretty strict on that.
Still to this day, I have a niece that just got accepted there, and it's really tough to change your major, but yet, you know, at 18, it's really tough to know what you want to do as far as your career goes. So I was able to do that, and I started under architecture because I like creating things. I like, actually like designing and building things. But I decided, or I learned, that I didn't have the artistic ability to actually be an architect. And then I went into construction management because still building. Then I went to civil engineering, and then I ended up with a degree in business finance.
I know. So I'm kind of just chuckling about this kind of path of, there's this very tangible, aspect of construction or architecture, right? You know, there's, and now you're here helping build companies, and it's completely the opposite, right? You do see some tangible effects, but a lot of times kind of mentorship or working with entrepreneurs, obviously we're going to kind of get into your personal entrepreneurial journey as well. But it's just kind of interesting on this kind of line of discussion that it's very intangible. And so how do you kind of deal with not seeing, I did this and I met with an entrepreneur for 6 hours over the last month and I haven't seen any market increase. Is that kind of something that you struggle with?
Not really. I mean, I think it really is a journey, and I'm working with entrepreneurs across the spectrum. So from like initial concept to, growth, right? So the initial concept aspect, I mean, I think you should kind of stew there for a while before you move forward. And you brought up an interesting point before we started about, what would I say to my 25-year-old self? I would actually like stay in that that early discovery stage longer and really, really honing in on the fact of, does my idea make sense, not only to me, but in the market and to my customers? Because I think there's too much of a rush to, let's do this. This is great. I love it. Maybe my parents say it's great. My friends say it's great. I'm going to do it. I'm going to jump in.
Right. There's kind of this hubris of the entrepreneur, right, of just like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to go and do it, and no one's going to tell me otherwise. But, it's interesting to have that kind of, reflection back. So what are some of the mechanisms that, I know you probably work with your energy companies through this, but that you would like go back and say, is this customer discovery? Is it doing interviews? And like, what does that kind of look like?
Yeah. I think, customer discovery really summarizes it. I think it's just an overall discovery of kind of where the customer mindset is, where the overall market readiness for either your technology or solution or concept as it evolves. There's been a number of instances where I came out in the market too early. It proved out to be a great idea, but it was too early for the market. And I have a friend who reminds me of that every time I see him.
Sounds like a good friend. It's not just the right idea, it's the right time, it's the right team, right?
Exactly.
I think as you kind of analyze what makes sense and what's going to work. So I want to kind of go take a few steps back and go into some of your career journey. So just to kind of summarize for our audience, I know you had some international experience in London and management consultant. And I think you even said in an email you'd sent to me, you're like, I kind of did that for my parents. And then I went to a startup, and you're kind of no looking back, right? So yeah. I kind of want to actually jump right to that startup you joined after the management consultant stint at EY, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you hit on it. And I think that's kind of important as we go into the culture aspects of kind of the perception of entrepreneurship, especially maybe a while ago. I think it's been evolving and it's more accepted. But I did go into management consulting because my parents wanted me to. I'm glad I did, don't get me wrong. But like, I was ready jumping out of college. I actually started a business in college with a friend of mine, and we grew that company to be profitable. We didn't make tons of money, but it was actually a lot of money at the time. I think we made like $30,000 for the year, and that was, as a college student, it was like a lot of money. So we did it more for the educational aspect, and again, because we wanted to build something. But then after I graduated, I was ready to like jump into like, I want to go full force startup mode, trying a number of different things. And my parents were, I come from kind of a local conservative Japanese family. Hopefully that means something to some people. But, it was like the mindset is get a job with a large organization, work your entire career, earn a pension, and you retire. That's kind of how it's done, right? And my parents just couldn't understand why I wanted to assume that much risk. And they'd at least have something to fall back on. So before I went into the world of startups, I joined a management consulting firm, and like you said, I was able to kind of travel the world, lived in London for 2 years on an expense account, which was an incredible experience, and kind of got a chance to experience big business and how things were done internationally as we rolled out this this Salesforce automation tool pre-CRM days to Western Europe, then Eastern Europe, then Latin America, Asia Pacific, and then back to the U.S. and Canada. So we did a true global implementation of a system. And I don't know if you want to dive into that, but that was before CRM. It was before Salesforce. And when Salesforce came out, that was one of the startups that I passed on because I never thought they would survive.
But oh, really?
Whole
oh, story. Man.
But, yeah, I don't know if you want to talk about that, but more so, like, you know, coming out of that and going into startups after I kind of paid my dues, you know, I joined this startup. It was with a former colleague of mine at Ernst & Young and a friend from college who actually went on, as a friend from Cal Poly who went on to be a management consultant at Ernst & Young, and then he went to get his MBA at Stanford. And during his MBA, he hooked up with another Stanford MBA, and they started this company. It was like a high-flying startup in the dot-com boom. It was actually on the cover of Time magazine. The title was Startup.com, and they raised millions of dollars from, you know, Sand Hill Road, and it was kind of the image of startups in San Francisco during the 2000s.
Right, right. And so you came at the, you were coming at the uptick of that ride.
Yeah.
You kind of came in when you're on the rocket ship, kind of on the way.
Exactly. So I was, you know, I was living in London, kind of observing what was going on. I had a lot of friends that lived in the city. You heard about, you know, kind of Netscape of the day and everything else kind of starting. And I was, again, trying to pay my dues and have something to fall back on. And I was advancing my career there. So I started as like the junior guy in the team, and I ended up being the project manager rolling out this international system, which was an awesome like career trajectory. But I was ready to go into the startup world, right? So I was looking for something, and this, because of my relationship with my old friend and colleague, it seemed like, you know, a good place to make that transition.
Yeah.
Looking back on it, you know, it's a totally different story. You know, it was like everyone was buying into this notion that, you know, it's a new world. You know, revenue doesn't matter. It's all about eyeballs. I don't know if you
I've heard stories. Yeah. No. So when you kind of came back, what was your role within that startup?
So I was the product manager, and I had so I was a part of really designing and driving traffic, content, and eventually like a functionality and some merchandise into the site.
So you got to, I know you got used, you came in, you know, during the 2000.com. Were you there for the crash?
Yeah, so I actually got it like before the 2000, you know, it was like at the tail end of the rise. So, yeah, I was there for like the launch parties and all that. And I remember, you know, March, April 2000 when the bottom dropped out. So
Was there like a specific moment where you kind of had a realization, or you remember going to the office and like things were just different, or walking around San Francisco? Was it just different?
Like, yeah, it certainly was. I mean, I think, it didn't turn on a dime. It was the market reaction to it, then the venture capital that kind of pulled back on the investments. So over a period of weeks, I think it was evident to me and to others. I mean, I was close to the founders, and then the founders, our CFO at the time, who went on to be the CFO of YouTube right before the sale to Google, and the CFO of Facebook. And
then, I've heard of those companies.
Yeah. so, like, he was obviously a smart guy.
Yeah.
Had a sense of what was going on in the financial market. So I think we probably had a better insight into what was coming. But again, everyone was thinking this was just a new world, different rules, and you know, like the gravitational pull. It, you know, eventually came back to kind of fundamentals of the market and valuations, and you know, some people say we're going through that transition again. But
yeah, I mean, you look at booms and busts, I think there's a Warren Buffett quote that talks about like when the tide goes out, everybody's going to know who doesn't have clothes on, right? So it's like just kind of this mindset that, you know, there are peaks and troughs, and that's the way it goes. It'll be booms and busts. And, you know, I think if you maybe look at some of the fundamentals, it'll actually be, hopefully we learned a little bit from the last, even 2008 time period, right? And so I guess that trend would be every 7 to 8 years or so. And then it's interesting in technology versus the rest of the market, right? So
yep.
Even 2008, driven by its subprime, you know, mortgage crisis for the most part, and obviously a lot of different other economics involved and geopolitical space and all that, and just seeing how things are going along and how more interconnected we are today. But it's easier than ever to build and launch a startup.
Yep.
Right. Technology is so much more available. Like putting up a server 10, 15 years ago to, could be hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars. Now you got Amazon Web Services. You can get a service up and, you know, super fast. We have startup weekend teams that are doing on Ruby on Rails products and building actually functional prototypes within 48 hours, and it's pretty awesome. So I think we're in exciting times. But jumping back to, you know, you had that experience in Silicon Valley with this awesome startup. Now, what was kind of the point where you in your career you were like, all right, you know, I'm ready to come back to Hawaii, and this is where I want to raise my family, and how am I going to pursue entrepreneurial endeavors coming back?
Yeah.
Here.
Sure. I mean, there were two startups in between in the Silicon Valley that I actually founded.
Right.
But coming back, like I mentioned at the opening, you know, my wife's from Kauai, my family's, you know, from various parts of the islands, and we just always wanted to come back and raise our family here. So both my kids were born in San Francisco, actually, but, you know, the first few years of life, you could pretty much be anywhere. But by the time my oldest son was turning 5. It was a decision point for us because we knew that, or we felt that, you know, we wanted to have that consistency once, my son entered into kindergarten, that it was the same kind of group of friends and throughout
right,
elementary
right.
school, right? So we wanted to keep that. So that was an inflection point, a decision that we had to make, and I'm glad that we did, obviously. I mean, I think it's easy to, especially for those who, grew up here, went away to college, or maybe even stayed. It's easy to get kind of sucked into that lifestyle. To each his own. And I think, whatever makes somebody happy is what they should pursue. But I think for us, it was an incredible experience because that's where things were happening at the time. And it was like, even looking back and looking at the craziness of the dot-com era.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was really, like, I can't even fathom another time when it was really the world was your oyster. And it was like, look, you have an idea for a business, you know, get a domain name, you know, and build a team, raise some money, and you can do whatever you want. And it was really an open field. So that era was really exciting to be where we were at. And my personal journey has led me to my mission in life, which I've adopted, is just trying to help local companies here leverage my experience from, you know, kind of bringing the best from what I've learned in the Silicon Valley through my experience at the Energy Accelerator and what I'm doing with the Neighbor Islands with ACDC, and really helping our whole community think about entrepreneurialism as kind of the future or a potential future leg of the economy, because I think that's what we're trending as a society. You know, before we were always thinking about attracting like big businesses, big employers, or to really build out a sector in Hawaii that would diversify our economy. I truly believe now that entrepreneurship is our future. It's like our kids, and especially watching my kids grow up, they're thinking about the world completely different.
Right.
You know, and their eyes are like, you know, what can I do? What can I create? What can I build? You know, what can I assemble with a team and collaborate with others, not only around me, but maybe virtually through, through the world with different minds, just to be able to create something here locally that could really produce something amazing, either an export product, a service. You know, your imagination can really take you anywhere. But and I think that's where we're going to be.
Yeah.
And what I hope we can do is just focus on building the infrastructure and the platform to enable that. And there's a lot of great work that's going on with a number of different organizations here locally that's doing that, from building, you know, kind of this, you know, a different accelerators to like the sandbox to like the, you know, the high speed, you know, internet and everything that's going to be required to really support that future.
Yeah. So how long before, coming back to, you know, coming back to Kauai and, the green car. So,
yeah.
Love the idea. I think it seems like it completely makes sense. And I kind of want to talk about how soon, you know, because you had a co-founder in that company, right? You guys got together, launched it, and maybe talk a little bit about that experience of the idea and then actually, you know, rolling out with a number of different hotels there, and maybe explain to our audience what it is. What is the idea?
Sure. So I'll preface it by saying that was probably another example of something that was a little bit before its time, and the infrastructure wasn't there to support it. But it makes sense. It's a good idea. We actually did, you know, customer discovery. We actually rolled it out with named, you know, hotels, and had some good traction and became profitable in one area. So it had all the right kind of milestones along the way. We got stuck because the broader infrastructure wasn't there to support it. So that's the overall story, and
right.
I'll go back
to
kind
of the post-mortem.
What it is.
Because it was renting cars, electric vehicles by the hour that guests at hotels could take advantage of, right?
Exactly. So we started it when car sharing was kind of at its infancy, and
because this was
2008.
Yeah, this was like 6 years ago. 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and that's when you know, that's when the idea originally formed, and we were kind of putting the structure and the business model around it. But so, you know, car sharing, the initial idea of car sharing, it was really turning car ownership on its head. So really thinking about you know, not having to own a car, but just having a car available for your use by the hour, right? So that's kind of like the original kind of Zipcar model. And we're looking at it a little differently, applying car sharing to our local market, which is obviously heavily tourism-based, right? So the majority of cars that are used that aren't owned by the individual are rental cars for tourists here in Hawaii. So we felt that it would be a good way to be able to reduce the cars on the road by reusing a single car for multiple uses during the day as travelers came in and they wanted to go, Pearl Harbor for the day, or they wanted to go, they needed a car to go, wherever.
And it makes economic sense even, because if they need it for a few hours, then the parking in Waikiki, especially, right, you can pay $30 a night some places or whatnot. So it definitely it's not like if you rented a car, it'd probably be cheaper, but it's just the convenience and the ease of it, right? And, when you guys kind of did some of your discovery, did you feel that the green aspect, obviously it's the branding green car and, the lower carbon emissions impact on the environment was a selling point? That, do you think that was too early, or did people really kind of grab onto that too?
Well, see, and what I was saying before is that the broader infrastructure wasn't there to support it. So today, the auto manufacturers are really embracing car sharing. They're saying that that's our future, as we're kind of looking at car sharing as a way to, and even Uber and Lyft and all, that's kind of the direction that we're embracing for manufacturing and supporting that infrastructure. They weren't there yet when we needed that to happen, and the financing wasn't there yet. So in order to finance our growth, we needed, kind of out of the box bankers, if you will, or financial partners.
Creative lending partners, right?
Yeah, which, it depends.
That's almost a misnomer. Even know if you could say that in the same sentence. Creative bankers. As a former banker, I know exactly what that means.
Exactly. They're always trying to put you in a box, or, we go back to those boom and bust cycles, or money's free and they're just, things are just going out the door. But we didn't hit that, and we didn't have those partners that would be able to kind of buy into something that was evolving. So now, auto manufacturers, what we needed at the time is some, and our value proposition to the auto industry was like, look, this is how you introduce your cars to a broad set of visitors around the world that have the economic,
they're in Hawaii. They got cash in their pockets.
It's the demographic that you want to market to, right?
Absolutely.
So, and you can have your cars introduced into this network, and all we need is to have some sort of favorable financing. Right, so I think that would go well today, which we couldn't get to the right people. Even when we finally did get to some of the right people, they weren't ready, because they're like, car sharing, that's a threat to our future of car ownership.
Yeah, to even kind of look back, the auto industry bailouts was right around 2008-09, I think, with the government bailing out GM and obviously a lot of kind of just turmoil, more or less, and especially in the American manufacturing in Detroit. And it's interesting now we talk about was it the right time or whatnot. If someone was to come and do that concept today, because if you go into Waikiki, you don't have that option right now, do you?
No. But others have entered the market, like Enterprise.
Yeah, they have their little car share, ride share thing.
And they've introduced it on a small scale, and I actually think that part of what we were doing early on, it raised eyebrows for the guys at Enterprise here, and it's a whole other story. But I think I think that's a good thing,
right.
I think that if I had anything to do with kind of the acceptance of car sharing, reducing traffic here in Honolulu and in the state in general, and introducing kind of more fuel efficient cars and kind of a different mindset of transportation, then I'll write that off as a success. Even though it was a
the juice is worth the squeeze. Yeah. And I think Warren, to give you credit. And this will kind of maybe transition to our next kind of subject. But, you know, it seems like a lot of the different startups that you've launched or even your work at Energy is, you know, a lot about the environment, a lot about, you know, your kind of you know, larger belief system that what you're doing here is, you know, how important it is, especially for Hawaii, right, with, you know, our dependence on oil and, you know, us not having the natural resources to, we have to import so much stuff. So I really think that, you know, your kind of career has shown, you know, your kind of investment in that. So, you know, congratulations on the you know, the learnings and whatnot with Green Car. And I do think it's a great concept and you know, seeing bits and pieces of it, obviously, in action today. So, you know, if you leave Energy Accelerator to go start Green Car 2, then, you know, they heard it here on the podcast first. No. Actually, a little sidebar. So I'm kind of curious. I know I was kind of reading your bio and some of the different startups you've had. You've been successful in raising millions of dollars for these different companies. So I would love to get some of your insights or tips that you would have for entrepreneurs that are looking to raise money.
Yeah, sure. I mean, and I just had to learn it all by myself, right? I mean, I don't think... I think today you have so much more out there as far as kind of tools for entrepreneurs. And
like the angel lists, or what do you mean by tools?
Yeah, things? I mean, even stuff like this. I mean, like, you know, podcasts, like having somebody, like, and I'll go into it, like what I learned, but like just being able to really... like get information about, well, what do I do? You right. know, what's the first step, and what are investors looking for? You know, it was trial by error for me. I encourage the listeners or anyone who's thinking about becoming an entrepreneur or raising money right now that there's so many resources out there, and you can save so much time and effort by learning from others, because I chased after different, looking back, I've chased after different avenues that were never going to invest. But, you know, it was like part of the characteristics, I think, that make a successful entrepreneur is determination. But sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't, right? If you're determined to secure an investor and they're never going to invest no matter what you do, then you're wasting your time.
You're barking up the wrong tree.
You're barking up the wrong tree. So, you know, so that's kind of step number one, I'd say, is really understand what who you're talking to, who you're targeting, and who would be a likely investor into whatever you're doing.
And you kind of get that just by obviously probably looking at their current investment portfolio or talking to other people.
Yeah. Yeah. And then just, you know, being, you know, asking those tough questions up front, right?
Yeah.
And you know, because I felt like, and I do think this is essential in the raising money, that investors invest in people, not ideas. Hmm. So, you know, I felt like, again, being kind of the determined entrepreneur, is like, okay, I need to, you know, convince you that an investment in me is worthwhile, right? So I'm going to, you know, and it's like, okay, well, I don't invest in, in clean tech, or I don't invest in, like, transportation. I don't invest in
you're
anything.
A swell guy, but this isn't right up my alley.
Yeah. Yeah. And then bring this back to, like, the local market, too. I remember sitting in someone's office and saying, look, somebody's saying, look, Warren, and this was kind of optimistic at the time. It's like, look, I have this real estate investment that I can make right now today. It's a guaranteed 20% backed by real estate. And, you know, why would I want to, if you're looking at the pure economics of it.
The opportunity cost of this investment.
Yeah,
right?
And I could lose all my money. It's a startup. There's tons of risk, you know. And so, obviously, that investor was investing for a return. And so there's a wide variety of different investor types. I mean, some are investing in, trying to do something good for the world, you know, more impact investors, and some are investing in a portfolio where they want that, 10x return. They're willing to take some risk, but, it needs to hit these different categories or notes, and so you really need to know what the lay of the land is, what the what the appetite for risk and the interest level from the investor, whether it be an angel investor or you know, an institutional or venture type of investor.
Yeah. So let's maybe talk a little bit about Energy Accelerator.
Sure.
And you kind of having your opportunity there. And so I actually pulled this from your bio on Energy site, and I'll quote here. So it's exciting to think about the potential of what can be done with new ideas. Hawaii has the perfect test bed for conditions to make these ideas and innovations come to life. So I wanted to just maybe start there and say, why is Hawaii the perfect place for energy innovation to take place?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you for reading that and seeing that out, because I remember when I read when I wrote that, and I truly believe it. That was years ago, and I truly believe it. I believed it then, and I think it's evolved to be really. I think we've shown over the years that energy has a place here in Hawaii that's unique, and we've been able to attract some of the best companies and that are making an impact here in Hawaii that could be a game changer throughout the world as far as energy, clean energy and innovation. And the reason is, for one, we are uniquely positioned as an island with a grid that has some of the strongest penetration of renewables already into the grid. We have policies that support energy, clean energy, and some goals that really bring us to the forefront of a 100% renewable system in the future. And we have some of the highest prices of electricity.
It's like 2 to 3 times the national average.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which you know, it's painful for most that live here, but for companies that really want to provide an economic return, this environment has the structure to provide an accelerated payback on these investments. So it makes a lot of sense. We've become the center, it's kind of ground zero of energy innovation, and some of which you know, was through our hard work and effort at the Energy Accelerator, and quite frankly, some of it was kind of luck. And I think that, but that's great, because now everyone's looking at us in Hawaii as what's going on. And you know, our application, I'll put a plug in, our applications are open right now for the Energy Accelerator on this next cohort.
Due July 1st, right?
Due July 1st.
So you got a couple
exactly.
weeks to get it in.
So,
well, actually, I think this might air after, but you know, probably, now that I think about that, but yeah.
All right. Well, we're always looking for great companies.
Yeah.
And we've extended our focus from not only clean tech, but into agriculture, water, and transportation, and cybersecurity. So, you know, each have an energy component, and you know, we're all those areas. I don't know, maybe it can even be a separate podcast, but like,
right, yeah.
You know, reviving local agriculture, the water aspect of everything that you know, kind of how things work here and why it's so important. And cybersecurity as being kind of the biggest threat to the energy system, all of which are kind of like integrated into where we try to focus our activities. If you have a company or you know of some type of innovation that could be ideal for Hawaii, you know, we're always looking.
Yeah.
We're always accepting.
Well, and I will echo just and even go over the top and say, you know, this, the Energy Accelerator and the work you guys are doing, you know, Don, Jill, yourself, the whole team is really phenomenal for Hawaii, for the ecosystem, for leveraging our regional benefits. Because even something we talk a little bit about at Sultan Ventures is, you know, Hawaii as just a geography is ideal for, you know, you have wind, solar, yeah. Thermal, hydro, like you have everything. You have the ocean here, you have the volcano, you have wind, and there's tons of sun, right? You know, the equator. So that is that has all those benefits as well. And your guys' partnership with the Navy, with Hawaiian Electric, and every and Pictor and everything you guys are doing, it's quite phenomenal. So give you guys tons of credit I'm really, really excited to see just the quality, like I said, of the companies that are coming through and active in Hawaii, you know, active with boots on the ground, active with projects, active investing. And so there's even multiples of the effect you guys have at that as well. And an awesome program. I mean, $75,000, right, for the go-to-market, and yep. then up to, I think, $1 million in project financing for the demonstration track.
Yep.
And this is a grant / investment kind of hybrid, right? I mean, you're talking 1%. Equity, right?
Yeah, so yeah, it's a range, and we do have a hybrid. I think that's we've created something that's pretty unique. So we have government funding from the Office of Naval Research and from the Department of Energy and from the state, and we also have private investors and we have corporate sponsors. So we really have different pools of capital.
You're bringing everybody to the dance party.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, so and we're bringing everybody, and that's, you know, that really makes an ecosystem, right? So we have buy-in support from the local community, from the federal government, from the industry as a whole, saying, you know, we want Hawaii to be that test bed. We want, you know, we want to engage with innovators here to use Hawaii as a test bed. To prove out the technology before we can go worldwide. And we're making tons of progress in Asia, too, right now, too. And that's part of our kind of mandate under Pictor, too, the Pacific International Center for High-Tech Research, which, you know, really extends throughout Asia. And, you know, so the launch pad that we've been working on, you know, starts with earlier stage companies and really has different resources along the way to support their growth. But we last year we just started an investment fund, so that that's the third kind of track after like the go-to-market track, demonstration track. We have an investment fund, we have a project financing fund so we're always like thinking ahead about like how can we support our entrepreneurs, our companies, and the local community to really build this ecosystem, and hopefully it could lift all entrepreneurs and the entire tide and system of those that are trying to support it.
Yeah, and you know, your work at Energy, you're really kind of rolling up your sleeves with those younger, earlier stage ideas or companies and kind of helping them through the lean startup kind of approach of how they can vet their ideas and, you know, applying your personal experience to really kind of mentor and guide them. So that must be exciting for you.
Yeah, it is. It is. It really is. It's exciting and rewarding. You know, I think in the past, I've just drawn on my own experiences, my own style to help mentor and develop these companies, and I really enjoy that. And again, it's being able to leverage kind of my experiences to be able to help others. But in the past, I've just kind of drawn on my own experiences. But just recently, I've kind of gone into a more structured training where it's based on executive coaching, and I'm going through a series of credentials right now to be able to really improve and develop my own style so that I have a proven methodology around how to help companies and executives and people like progress through that. So I'm really excited about that too. And I think
very cool.
That's kind of a lesson for everybody, hopefully, but like especially for entrepreneurs that, you know, in order to like be successful, you got to constantly kind of like improve and reinvent yourself. So I think don't become complacent in anything, and even if you think you have it right, you got to think about what's next.
Yeah, continue to be growing. And so talking about what's next, I'd love to get some of your insights or what, you know, bringing out your crystal ball a little bit. What are some trends you see in the energy industry? Like, what are the next innovations that you're really excited about?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I think that, you know, obviously, you know, storage and integration is very important for us to realize kind of the grid stability and to achieve our 100% goals. That the last mile is going to be very difficult. Technical difficulties increase as we do go to 100%. I think those targets are aggressive, but it pushes us, right? So I think the trends are less on the generation of electrons, but more the storage and the stability on the grid. That's on the pure, energy side. On the, I mentioned agriculture and water. There's such a huge energy component to agriculture and water that that many don't realize. And I think that's why we're trying to not only meet our 100% renewable goals, but then also looking at different areas like agriculture and water and transportation to be able to say, okay, how can we become more efficient in those areas? How could we potentially revive agriculture here locally in different ways? Because energy has been such an impediment and a costly aspect of kind of finalizing the agriculture system here to be able to make that kind of part of the future as well. So. Having innovative trends around supporting agriculture, more efficient water systems, and transportation is actually a really tough one too. As far as getting more innovation and a higher use of renewables into our transportation system.
Yeah, and you guys even have in your current portfolio, you have like Kunoa, mm-hmm. you have Transit Screen, I believe, as well. And so some of these kind of, as you guys have even kind of broadened out, just, you know, seeing all these really impactful sectors that energy is such a huge component of. So, and the cybersecurity one more recently, that's pretty interesting. So really kind of curious to see some of the exciting companies that you guys are bringing in, hopefully for this next cohort as well.
Yeah.
Warren, let's maybe take the last 10 minutes before we get into the Q&A, and let's just kind of talk about actually entrepreneurship in Hawaii. So I know we were kind of chatting even before and a little bit earlier in the podcast about the importance of kind of risk in entrepreneurship and maybe Hawaii's attitude to that, you know, your kind of personal experience. I know you're a mentor for HTDC, so High Technology Development Corp, and you live on Kauai, and, you know, you're from Big Island. So I know, like, I think you are the guy in Hawaii to talk to about this, and you're active in the trenches with a lot of these companies and entrepreneurs. So what are kind of the attitudes in Hawaii, specifically on the neighbor islands, related to entrepreneurship?
Yeah. Great question. I'm glad you brought this up, because I think that, at the center of personal risk in being an entrepreneur, because you can look at it as financial risk for an investor to put money in an entrepreneurship, but I think even more fundamental as someone who's looking at becoming an entrepreneur or going down that path as a career, that, you know, you can't really avoid a discussion about failure. And nobody really wants to talk about it. It's almost like, and even more so, we had an interesting discussion with a friend of mine recently, where saying, you know, that this next generation, you know, everyone on the team, whether you win or lose, you get an award, right?
That's come up multiple times. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. You know, and then, you know, and that's fine. You know, everyone deserves credit on that stuff, but, like, you know, it's not a win isn't and recognition isn't the only, like, outcome that you should be striving for, because failure, even though that's such a kind of a negative word sometimes, it's like there's so much learning that comes from it. And you can't be an entrepreneur unless you look at failure head on and really and really tackle it and fail it, because otherwise you're not gonna go out there and do something that has any risk on it, right? If you're taking the safe route, then there's a lot of different other choices for you, and I certainly don't want to say that it's for entrepreneurship is for everyone, because I think you sure. do need a high risk tolerance.
Yeah.
I see it firsthand. A lot of companies that I mentor, some of my own personal experiences where you have everything riding on it. I mean, and I know that feeling, and I've been there. It's mentoring's not even the right word. I'm also like counseled people through that.
So you're getting your counseling degree as well.
Yeah. Right? You know, I know that feeling. It's just like you have literally everything on the line, and you got to make this work. And that's could be, you know, that creates a lot of drive and incentive for making it work. But also going back to what I was saying initially, is spending enough time up front saying, hey, is this really a good idea?
And you de-risk the idea as much as possible, right?
And then before you jump in,
is this a real problem I'm solving?
Yeah, is this a real problem? Is the market going to accept this? Is the market willing to pay what it takes to make it financially viable, right?
All these even questions. Back in the napkin math, right? Yeah. It's so funny, people kind of let passion overcome, and they'll get to the point of decision time, and you know, like you said, everything's on the line, and passion will have to push you through, but it also has to make economic sense.
Yeah, it does. And to be at that point where you have everything on the line, you want to make sure that you're headed for a path that, as long as you execute, you can succeed. But that's why I think it's really important to do your homework up front. There's a book called The Mom Test, which is an interesting philosophy, because you go to your mom and say, yeah, mom, I have this idea of this widget, and you know what's your mom gonna say? Oh, honey, that's a great idea, I love you. So you're like, oh, my mom liked it. But then you extend that forward, you take it to your friends, you take it to people you know, and they're like, oh yeah, everybody around me is saying it's a great idea, I'm gonna go for it. But and that may be the case, but like, look, if fast forward and you have everything on the line and you're like, I have no way forward, yet I have everything on the line. It's like you got to make sure that you have something that will advance at each stage. You'll have that next level. As long as you execute, you'll have more investors or more partners or more customers to carry you through. And I see that, unfortunately, too often. So I think risk, failure, planning, being honest with yourself and with your family as far as like what it's going to take. Your family really has to be bought into it, because entrepreneurship is not a part-time job, and it doesn't stop during holidays and life events sometimes. And, so you have to really understand what you're getting into before you dive into. But I do think it's the future. I do think that's the potential to really build something on your own, something that could make the biggest impact in the world and in your family and your future, has huge benefits. But know what you're getting yourself into.
So do you feel like... Has looking back over the last, maybe since 2008 even, has there been, a positive shift to risk tolerance and entrepreneurship and seeing it kind of through the proper lens? Or obviously we have probably even further to go, but maybe a better question is, what are some of the things that we can do as a community, whether that's the government, whether that's the accelerators or others, or maybe we're doing everything we can to kind of educate and provide this, like you said, hopefully what we're doing with the podcast and things will get us there. But mm-hmm. is there more we can do, I guess? How can we maybe, you talk about your kids, that you seeing that there's some more opportunities. They're more, they have a higher risk palette. They're like, Is that kind of predicate of across the board? You feel like Hawaii, maybe the next generation is going to be like, yeah, that's the entrepreneurial generation?
Yeah, yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for doing this. This is, you know, I think everybody's like, you know, getting the word out, kind of like really having an honest conversation, perhaps even a debate about what where our resources should be spent.
Sure.
As a state, as kind of, you know, a part of this ecosystem, building what we're doing for the future. I think it all matters. I honestly think most, you know, we are doing everything we can, but there could be a lot more to be done. And what I mean by that is that, you know, this is not, you know, what we do here in Hawaii is not isolated. You know, there's states that are making concerted efforts to be able to attract great companies, great entrepreneurs that have this amazing infrastructure to say, look, easy to connect to, you know, a high-speed network. You have a thriving pool of investors to be able to support your growth and everything that entails, you know. So from the community aspect of it, maybe some tax policies and some you know, energy credits and all of the things that need to happen to be able to make it attractive, not only here in Hawaii, but like nationwide, because like I said, you know, states are doing their own things to be able to make those you know, to adjust their priorities to really see this as being a solid footing for the next generation. So I encourage everyone to kind of not be complacent and do more and try to do more, because you know, I think I'm very encouraged with everything that's going on, from like the sandbox to like these maker spaces for the next generation. I think, you know, having these ability, and I was very fortunate, just a week and a half ago I was in the Silicon Valley at Google, and I brought my son along.
Oh, cool.
And you know, I had friends over there that really gave us a tour and brought us in this room. It was like a maker space where they had, you know, 3D printers, and you can just tinker with all sorts of things. And nobody was in there, but my friends were like, yeah, sometimes I come in here and play, and this, you know, here's this clock that I made, or here's this like little system thing I made. I was like, yeah, this is awesome. And this is what they're talking about building on Kauai, you know, this small little island in the middle of the Pacific, right? It's like, yeah, we can do this, and we can have these the same things that they're and the cost has really driven these.
It's much more accessible, right?
Yeah. So we can do this for, you know, the next generation, and through virtual learning and broadcast, you can be anywhere and absorb all this stuff. You don't have to be in the Silicon Valley. You don't have to be at Google. I feel like
you know, it's democratizing a little bit of that access that's really valuable, right? And kind of leveling the playing field a little bit. I think, you know, we don't have to get into like all the different you know, impacts of capital and everything in the different areas, but really it's exciting to start a business, I think, especially a software based company. And I think any company to start up really is going to have a component of software, even if there is hardware, right? You've probably seen that through energy and companies like STEM and so forth. But so really awesome chance to kind of chat through, you know, a really important topic. Obviously, you know, us kind of telling the story of Hawaii's entrepreneurs and yourself working right alongside them. And so I want to kind of pivot actually to our last few questions, which will be just kind of this rapid fire Q&A we do for every guest. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So tough question. What is your favorite thing about Hawaii?
The culture.
Culture. Very good. Do you have a favorite beach?
Yeah.
That you're willing to share. Your favorite public beach that you're willing to share.
Yeah, I
saw this look, and his eyes like, I was just surfing. He's like, no way, I'm telling him this.
Well, it's a funny story. Going back to Green Car real quick. Okay. We had this like app that we're building, right? So like the people that were you know, traveling around the island could see like the best places to go and stuff. And I want what I wanted to put on there is like the best beaches, the best surf breaks, and one of my friends said, you know, I think you get a knock on the door or call if you like put these surf breaks on this like public app, right? But no, I love Hanalei. The North Shore of Kauai is my favorite spots where
special place, yeah.
Special place. But go back to the culture, I just real briefly. That,
sure.
I think a lot of people come to Hawaii because of the weather, the beaches, you know, the natural environment.
The obvious benefits, right?
Obvious benefits. Yeah. But to me, the culture and the people are really what makes this place special.
Absolutely. The Aloha spirit, it's real,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So maybe let's put together kind of a little entrepreneur's toolkit. So kind of mention maybe some of your top three either tools or resources, maybe even books that you recommend to entrepreneurs over and over again.
Gosh, there's really not one size that fits all. There's something called EOS. It's really created to be a platform for entrepreneurs. That is, you know, I've recommended that to some that really kind of want like more of a formula approach to things. I've mentioned the Mom Test before. There's tons of books on customer discovery, on vetting your business model. That's definitely something that we focus on the go-to-market track. But the more you can do that and kind of learn about the mindset of testing your own ideas. It's a really tough thing to do because you actually have to become detached from it before you can make some objective conclusions about it. And I think that having communities or establishing your own support group of entrepreneurs or like-minded friends or CEOs that you trust, that
like a mastermind group kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know that you know the best groups are just people you trust that are in like non-competitive types of businesses that you can go to and really dive into different issues, because I think there's certain issues you don't want to take your board, you don't want to take your employees, not even your wife or your family. It's just like who do I talk to about these things, you know. So to be able to have that group, to be able to have like just a myriad of resources online about, you know, from and then different groups and organizations like HTDC, Startup America, like, you know, just different programs that provide and various accelerator groups. You know, there's all these resources that you shouldn't glance over, and then once you get into one, I think that'll open the door to a lot of others.
Absolutely. So Warren, kind of reflecting back on your career, what is one thing that kind of stands out in your mind that you're like, I'm really proud of that?
Gosh, I have kind of a standard or something that came to mind. I really don't. I mean, I think at an early age, I tackled something in college that I still look back on. And the reason I think about it is, I was on the mainland and I went through San Luis Obispo, and it's still there. It was just. I guess what I'm really proud of is just tackling those big issues, that things that. You know, some said that there's no way to that it could be done, and to do it, and you know, don't, you know, swing for the fences and you know, give it all you have and maybe you'll connect. But I went back to San Luis Obispo and I was still there, and I'm like, oh, this is awesome. This is
cool.
It's a long story, and I'll be happy to share it to you. And
over a beer. Warren, do I? Yeah, exactly. So do you have anybody in your career that's really inspired you or mentored you?
Yeah. I definitely learned from a number of people that, you know, and I encourage all these, you know, every entrepreneur to find those that you connect with that have a true stake maybe in your future. And what I mean by that is not a financial stake, but just like someone who just naturally wants you to see you succeed. What I've been working on with and with a lot of different accelerator programs and stuff, there's this match with a mentor and a company, right? And you try to create this relationship. And sometimes it can be very valuable, but it's almost like online dating, right? It's like trying to like match this thing. I think you have to find those people who are truly just like have a natural connection to you, and just whether or not it's with this business or with this business or something completely different, someone that just wants to see you succeed. And that's really hard to find, but once you do find those people, it could be just that's in my definition what a true mentor is somebody who's like kind of through thick and thin and isn't driving something just for an investment, but because they want to see you succeed.
Any final tips or pieces of advice for entrepreneurs or anybody listening?
I think just to be able to really think big and never take "it can't be done" as something that limits your perspective. But before you dive in, just make sure that you have a path to succeed.
Very good. Well, Warren, I really appreciate you coming on the show with us today. Really admire your kind of investment into our community, you sharing your knowledge and experiences. And obviously, I kind of showered my praises on Energy Accelerator and everything you guys are doing, because it's exciting to see. And we're neighbors and huge fans of yours. So keep working hard and fighting the good fight.
Thank you.
Yeah, good times. Thank you. Great stuff from Warren. I had a blast. Thank you guys for sticking around and listening to the show. Please share it, subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. I'm sending you positive high-five vibes through the airwaves. This is the Startup Catalyst Podcast, brought to you by Sultan Ventures. I'm your host, Luke Tucker. Signing off, tune in next Thursday for our episode where we chat with Keone DeFranco, CEO and co-founder of Lua Technologies.